from Tuketo LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and I've always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day, so things like leafy greens and above-ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein scaled to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalised keto. I'll be asking my guests each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary woman is Siobhan Huggins. After meeting Dave Feldman at Keto Fest 2017, Siobhan's passion for lipidology was ignited and she was driven to research all she could in a mad attempt to figure out how lipids were involved in the immune system and chronic diseases. She has since written two articles that have been published on cholesterolcode.com on plaque development and LDL modification, with many more posts planned. Siobhan has been keto for 15 months, in which time she has lost over 65 pounds, reversed her hypertension, and stopped her blood sugars from going out of control. Siobhan has dedicated herself to decoding the mysteries of cholesterol and is just getting started on that epic adventure. Welcome, Siobhan, to the Keto Women Podcast. How are you doing today?
Well, it's very early in the morning right now, so a little bit tired, but I have coffee, so there's that.
So why don't you tell me a bit about how you started keto and why you started keto?
So I've been keto for about 16 months now. And I started because I was very overweight, about 221 pounds when I am 5'1". And I also had high blood pressure and my doctor gave me a stern talking to for my cholesterol. It was very high at the time. And I had tried repeatedly with calorie restriction. And I'm not the type of person who goes for the reasonable, like, I'm going to eat like 1,200 to 1,500 calories a day. No, I would go for like 800. And I would have really terrible, really, really terrible mood swings. Which would only make me feel worse, you know. And I had done that several times, and I'd do it for like a week or two, maybe like a month, and it would just get so bad that I wouldn't be able to keep it up. And I went into my mom's office and said, you know, I'm going to try calorie restriction again. I really want to lose weight, all this type of stuff. And she kind of looked at me and said, why don't you try this instead, and handed me a magazine. And it had an article about keto in it. And she said, I'm considering doing this next month as well. It was August at the time. And so why don't we try this together and see if it works? And I hadn't known at the time, but she had experimented a bit with paleo and lost some weight. We kind of, in the family, we kind of figured she had lost weight because she was doing a lot of farm work, a lot of intensive exercise, and apparently not. So I was kind of skeptical. It's like, okay, a diet that's in a magazine. The article in question was featuring like Dr. Oz, and I didn't like him very much. But I took it, I read it, and I left and did some research, kind of tried to see if it was even feasible as an option, if it had any merit to it at all. And I did find that, there was some stuff that, you know, there were lots of people doing it, lots of people had success, and so I figured, you know, I'll try it for 2 months, no cheating, extremely strict, I'll stick to, you know, these things called macros and that kind of thing, and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, worst case scenario, it does nothing. Or I lose a little bit of weight and gain it back, and then, you know, I'm back where I started, so big deal. So that's kind of how I got started, and by the end of those 2 months, I had lost 20 pounds, and one thing I didn't mention before is my fasting blood sugar was about 100, so not pre-diabetic, but I noticed before that it was kind of trending upwards. I would test because mom had gestational diabetes with me, and I knew that put me at a higher risk. But after those 2 months, I was getting readings of like 74, 75, where it had been like 100 before. So I was like, okay. And then I had lost this weight, and there was a transition period, but at the end of that 2 months, I was feeling really good. And so I was like, well, you know, I said I would give it this trial period, and it's kind of way surpassed my expectations, so let's keep doing it and see where it takes me.
Oh, that sounds great. You finally found something that seemed to work really well. So, yeah, thanks, Mom.
Yeah, no kidding. We've kind of been through this entire journey together, where she would be like, hey, I read this book, you should read it, like Wheat Belly and The Obesity Code and that type of stuff. And I would be like, hey, I found this book, Eat Fat, Get Thin, and I found this podcast, Two Keto Dudes. I found that almost exactly a month after I started. And I was like, Mom, you have to listen to this. These guys are making this podcast, and there's this guy, and his name is Carl, and he's kind of going through the same stuff that we are. So let's listen to this together, and maybe they can give us tips and kind of keep us away from really common mistakes, and they're just really fun to listen to. So we were kind of swapping resources back and forth, and I think we've both benefited from that, and we would also come across different information, like maybe restricting protein can help, maybe like instead of calorie restriction, we should kind of go by what the obesity code goes by, like intermittent fasting, and maybe it's not really about the calories. So we had this sort of like two-person tribe thing kind of going on, like each person encouraging the other. And she's also pointed out that whenever I was actively losing, she would be stalled. And whenever she was actively losing, I would be stalled. And so it was kind of like this weird coincidence going on. And up to this point, we've lost almost exactly the same amount. She's lost 71 pounds, I've lost 70 pounds. So that makes her feel great because she's losing as much as a 22-year-old. And it makes me feel great because I'm doing as well as my mom.
That's brilliant. It sounds like it's worked so well that you start off with this really supportive, like you say, two-person tribe. But then with the information that both of you found, you've extended that tribe out on the internet and now in real life with the people you've actually met. It sounds like a great progression. So it sounds to me, and we have spoken about this before, but it sounds like you've got a real ability and a real interest in research and data, because you're quite young. You're 22, is that right?
Yep, 22.
And it sounds like this is a quality of yours that you've had for a long time. I believe you were homeschooled, and I think it was your mum, wasn't it, who really encouraged this characteristic in you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so from kindergarten to first grade, I was actually in public school, and she had pulled me, my brother, and one of my sisters out of public school to be homeschooled because, you know, the public schools in Indiana aren't that great. And she had noticed that with my older siblings, they were kind of struggling in class a bit because they were kind of getting bored or the teachers weren't great, stuff like that. And she was starting to see the same pattern with me. So I guess she figured it was better to pull us out and kind of work with us individually. And yeah, ever since I was a kid, she would kind of encourage researching and being skeptical and maybe not accepting things just because they're said that way. Whenever I asked what a word meant, she'd tell me, go look it up in the dictionary. We have, like, this whole bookshelf of encyclopedias, and she's like, all your answers are right there. And when I was younger, starting from about age 11, I had actually gotten... she's mentioned that I seem to get very depressed, very withdrawn, not very social anymore, and a lot of that time I spent just reading. And I was very depressed at the time, and I was up until a couple months into keto, I guess. And so most of that time was either spent online, just researching various topics that I found interesting, kind of looking into skeptic communities and like scientific communities and stuff like that, reading a whole bunch of different books on different topics. And it's just always something I found very interesting. Like, the world has all this different stuff, and it's like the information is right there if you look at it, and most people, I think, don't. But it's something that has always interested me, and there's never really been one specific topic that I found, like, super vastly interested in. There were, like, hobbies I would have that I'd get very obsessive about. Gymnastics was one of them, like, tea and stuff like that. But nothing research-oriented, really. I would just kind of skim the surface of a lot of topics. And even with keto, I would take in the information sort of passively. I would take in what was relevant to me, but I wasn't going out and researching, like reading actual research papers. I would kind of read books and take what it said at face value almost, and I would find it interesting, but nothing really that triggered that kind of obsessive interest that I can get. So I suppose it's always been a part of my life, but that aspect of me was always kind of surface level, I guess you could say.
It sounds a little bit like it was also maybe a way of losing yourself a bit if you had issues with mood and depression. Actually getting lost on the internet and into research is quite a good way of distracting yourself from feeling not so great.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's true. I never really researched depression in particular, but I guess I didn't really want to think about it or acknowledge that it was something that I dealt with. But just researching, like, nature documentaries and, you know, just, like, how solar panels work, that kind of thing, it was very distracting, and I could sit with a book and just read for the entire day, and I would look up and it'd be nighttime, and it's like, oh, good. The day is over. I can go to bed now.
Mm. And you found your boyfriend online as well, didn't you? Is that right? I seem to remember.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Because he lives quite a long way away, doesn't he? Tell us a bit about him and how you met him.
So at the time, I was part of a forum for games. That was another hobby of mine. Still is somewhat, but not as much. And a mutual friend of ours had actually asked him, like, what's your dream girl like? Can you describe her? And he did, and the mutual friend was like, oh, I know someone like that. Let me give you her username. So he started talking to me. And really, it just kind of went from there. We started out kind of talking as friends. He was, I think, very shy at the time. And surprisingly, I was not with him. And it was just very, very easy to talk to him. And there was also this kind of intriguing appeal because he's European, Swedish. So it's kind of like, it's almost like the research aspect of me came out, because it's like, oh, what is your life like? Like, how does your family differ from mine? How is it the same? How do you pronounce these different words? Stuff like that. And I don't know, I guess we're both like very stubborn and very pattern oriented, because once we kind of settled in with each other, there's never a question of like, oh yeah, but this is so hard. Oh, but we're so far away. Like, it was difficult, but at the same time, like, there was no other option. Like, no other option makes sense. Like, why end this just because it's difficult now? When, you know, like, one thing I would do on long car trips, because I traveled a lot as a kid visiting family, is I would have these thoughts like, this trip is so long, but I will be there before I know it, and it'll be over before I know it. So I kind of had the same mindset with him. Like, yeah, I'm 14 right now. I can't really travel out of the country, but before I know it, I'll be 18. Before I know it, I'll have a job and have enough money to come visit. And before I know it, we'll be living together. Before I know it, you know. And it's like, when you find someone like that who's willing to sort of go through that with you and is as dedicated as you are, it's like there is no other option. Like, it doesn't even come to mind. I guess that's just, what else would I do?
Exactly. I mean, that is incredibly special and incredibly rare to find someone like that. And it was several years, wasn't it, before you actually traveled to Sweden to meet him?
Yeah. So we started talking when I was 14, going on 15. And it was 4 years before I turned 18 and had gotten a job and had saved up money. And I did some research into, like, how do I get the cheapest tickets? And there's this website that gives you discounts if you're under this certain age, and I'll go and do that. And I made all the plans and packed up and left. And the first visit was only for 2 weeks, because we were both kind of paranoid, like, what if we suddenly hate each other? Obviously that didn't happen, but I guess we were trying to be, like, responsible about it.
But it's very strange, isn't it? I mean, what was that like when you'd gotten to know someone so well, but you'd never actually met in person? It must have been quite something.
Yeah, I actually remember seeing him for the first time in the airport. And, like, my first thought was, wow, he's so much taller than I thought. Because he's, like, a foot and a half taller than I am. But, like, we hugged each other, obviously, and as soon as we sat down to wait for the train to come, we just started talking, like, what do you want to have for dinner? Do you want to rest when we get home? Whatever. And I kind of figured it would be that way. Either it would be like we never knew each other and we'd have to relearn all over again, or it'd be like we'd known each other forever. And it ended up being the second one. Like, we just settled into each other, I guess. And it didn't feel strange at all. It just felt normal.
Wow. I'm an absolute sucker for a romance and romantic stories. So, yeah, I could go on for hours talking about that. But you've started keto since you've met him, obviously. Mm-hmm. So presumably, you know, he's noticed some changes in you, and you know, not only the fact that you've shrunk, but, you know, your mood and how it's really impacted your mood for the better, hasn't it?
Yeah, that is one thing I struggled a lot with the calorie restriction, is it gave me these terrible mood swings. And I mean, he would get the full brunt of that because he's who I talk to the most. I would talk to him every single day. And so one thing that he really noticed is my mood improved and kind of leveled out. And I wasn't so anxious and I wasn't so paranoid, because I'd, like, even after years, I would just assume that I was annoying him, that I was bothering him, that I was talking too much. And that kind of settled down and it wasn't so bad and I seemed happier. And that's something that he's commented on. Because I kind of asked him, like, you know, what if this doesn't work? What if I gain all the weight back? And this was after I lost, like, 30 or 40 pounds. And he said, you know, I don't really mind either way whether you gain the weight back. Like, I'm happy either way. I liked you before and I like you now. But the thing that he really liked was I was happy. And I don't think he had ever seen that before with me. I was always very depressed, very anxious, very on edge, I guess, like all the time. And so just seeing me able to relax, being very proud of myself, like reporting back with, I've lost this much, and, you know, the pants I wore to my job interview, they don't fit anymore. I had to get a belt, like all this type of stuff. He was excited for me. And knowing that he didn't care if I gained all the weight back, and even if it didn't work for weight loss, as long as I was happy, he didn't care. Like, that was very comforting. It lessened the feeling of possible failure, because it's like, how can it be failure if he'll like me anyway? He's been extremely supportive.
Yes, that must have given you a lot of confidence to really, really go for it and, you know, see where it took you.
Yeah, definitely.
So he's thrilled with it then, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, he has made some comments, none that can be repeated, but yeah, he's very pleased, not just with my looks, but with my mood. The level of community that I've found, I've gained a lot of friends through it. I've gained an interest, and granted, he's not very scientifically interested, or at least not at the level that I am, or at least in the specific topics that I'm interested in, but he's happy I have something I'm interested in and that I've found something I want to do.
Yeah, something that has such a positive impact on you and your happiness. I mean, by the sounds of it, how will that not be something that thrills him? What's it like in Sweden? I mean, it's Diet Doctor Central. And I know the government have made changes with much more towards the low-carb, high-fat approach. So presumably there's some quite nice keto fare on offer over there.
Yeah. So there is still a lot of, like, bread. There's stuff like Simlor, which is like a saffron bun, I guess, with whipped cream and all that type of stuff. There's cookies and crackers and bread. But there's also, like, caviar and pickled herring and... I was over for Christmas one year, and it's this literal smorgasbord of food for Christmas, and I was just able to pile up on, like, the meatballs and the herring and all this different type of, like, low-carb vegetables and fats and stuff like that. There is a lot of option. I have not had any issues with it whatsoever, and I have taken over some of the recipes that I've made here, where I'll make him, like, fathead pizza, which he's now fallen in love with, and that type of stuff. And then he'll make me some of the food that he likes and kind of adapt it to be keto. Yeah, I've had no issues at all. It's been extremely easy.
And you talk about the community that you found, and that really started branching out from becoming involved with the Two Keto Dudes, I think, didn't it? That's how that started.
Yeah. So about a month after I started keto, I started listening to their podcast, and eventually they started talking about this Facebook group that they have. And I decided to join the group and kind of check it out. And honestly, at the time, it's all just like a blur. I don't even remember what I talked about there, but all I remember is I had a ton of fun. And eventually they talked about how they were going to open this new forum and how they wanted me to be an admin. And I had messaged Richard saying I was closing down my Facebook account because I was just kind of sick of it. And he was like, well, do you want to be an admin here and kind of come join us over there instead? And I was like, yeah, sure. As a result, I ended up just getting to know all the other admins. I've become friends with, I think, pretty much all of them. And I started talking to them every day, and I met them in person at KetoFest for the first time, which was very exciting. And it's almost like having a second family, because they're who I go to if I need to talk about something, if I'm having problems, and, you know, I can't talk to my mom about it, because it's even like a level deeper than anything I can talk to her about. And they've all been extremely supportive. The interest I've gained over the past 6 months, they've all encouraged me. They've given me a kick when I need one. So yeah, it's been fantastic. And the forum, too. People comment all the time that the community there is fantastic. And I definitely agree. I have invested a lot of time just hanging out with people, answering their questions, and it's just been amazing. I've never had a place where I felt like it was where I was meant to be. The ketogenic forums and the admins and like KetoFest, that's where I'm meant to be. Like, there's not even a question anymore.
Well, and that's a whole new avenue, isn't it? Because you met somebody at KetoFest that you'd had admiration for. We're a bit of a fangirl. So let's hear about that, because that's really changed your path, your direction in what you do quite dramatically.
Yes. So like I said, even with keto, my research was very passive. I would intake it and kind of, that's it. I wouldn't go super seeking out new information besides maybe like reading a new book if I came across it. But before going to KetoFest, I had seen Dave Feldman's presentation, his Breckenridge one. And so I met him at KetoFest, and he was hanging out at Carl's house, actually. And so I started asking him questions because I was participating in the Feldman protocol that he was doing over that weekend. And so I kind of had an in, and I just started asking questions I had about lipids. You know, Gary Taub said this in Good Calories, Bad Calories. And do you think that's really how it works? And, you know, how does HDL work? What does it do? How does LDL work? What does it do? Like you said during your presentation that it's like this network. Like, what do you mean by that? And, I don't think there was a single time where he ignored me or anything like that. He answered all the questions I had, and he started giving me pieces of things that he had been thinking about for a while. LDL is used as a part of the immune system to fight pathogens and help clear them out. What if that's true for reactive oxygen species too? What if heart disease isn't in itself a bad thing? Maybe it's a reaction to a bad thing. Maybe the process is a normal one that becomes broken over time. And these were things he didn't have an answer to. It's just things that he had speculated on, and he just kind of shared them as we were talking over that weekend. And I am the type of person who very much likes to solve puzzles. And so he had basically handed me this box of puzzle pieces. And he had said, I think it makes this picture, but I don't really know. And I'm not the type of person who can be like, well, I'll wait for him to put the pieces together and get back to me. I just became really fascinated. He described it in such a way that I could not stop thinking about it. And granted, part of that was like, oh, it's Dave. It's so exciting. I'm talking to Dave. It's like a presentation, but in real time. I'm still that way, granted. But he talked to me like he didn't talk down to me. He talked to me like an equal. And I started to kind of figure out where he was going with how he was thinking. And it was such an exciting thought. It was like, wait, what if this is really true? Like, I've never thought of it this way before. And so after that point, on the bus ride back from Connecticut, I had his phone number because he had it on the forms for the Feldman protocol stuff. And I texted him and I started asking, like, what do you suggest I start out with to kind of get a grasp on this stuff? And he suggested Peter Attia's The Straight Dope on Cholesterol, which was way over my head. But I read as much as I possibly could. I think I got like 4 parts in, and I had a horrible headache, but I just could not get enough. And after that, I started with textbooks, and I started reading through those. And after that, I went to research papers. And after a while, I was talking with him and the other admins, and I was describing what I had kind of learned to that point. And he asked me if I wanted to write a blog post about what I had learned so far. And I did. So that's kind of how I started with my crazy research.
And this is on his cholesterolcode.com website.
Yes. So I've posted 2 articles so far now, and I put a ton of work into them. It's kind of insane. And they've gotten really good feedback. I've actually been surprised. Because while researching, it's like, it cannot be this simple. Like, it can't just be this, almost like an immune response to this kind of damage and all this type of stuff. Like, like someone would have talked about this before. They would have described it this way before. And I figured, like, when I posted it, I would get, like, so much criticism, and lots of people have added things to it, but I've never gotten, like, you're straight up wrong, and this is why. So that's been kind of a revelation for me, and it's just been insane. Like, you can look at it and look at this small part of it and spend months and months and months, and you still don't understand it, and you just keep finding more and more and more pieces to it. And the amount of things that you want to know just grows and grows, and I mean, you find answers to some stuff, but mostly you just find more questions and more questions and more questions.
That's the thing, isn't it, with that kind of research? Like you say, it just opens up more questions and more rabbit holes to fall down. But, you know, that's part of the exciting thing about it, isn't it? And it has been wonderful to see the development from your blossoming interest in all things lipid to, yes, all the research you were doing, but then, yes, the suggestion that you write an article, and I can remember you being totally freaked out by the idea of doing that, and really stressing about writing it and being an absolute perfectionist about releasing it because it was never perfect and it was never going to be right. And but by the time it was out there and you started getting the feedback and started really connecting and gaining a confidence in that, actually people are interested in what you've got to say. People are interested in your theories. And that was another sort of growth development step. I think it's been lovely watching your confidence grow.
Yeah, and that kind of has always been a bit of a struggle for me, feeling like people don't really care about what I have to say. And there's never really been anything in particular that kind of spurned that. It's not like I was treated like I was uninteresting, probably the opposite. The perception that I had was, you know, annoying, uninteresting, very awkward. I would interact with my coworkers, and I'd go through almost like a cycle where it's like I would really, really want to talk to them, and I would talk, and then I would regret that I said anything, and I would feel like it was too awkward, or I said something stupidly, and then I would start to withdraw, and then, you know, it would just go through it over and over and over again. And part of that has been helped just by going keto, because my mood is so much more stable. But also part of that has been the community, because it's something I know that people are going to be interested in because they're going through it too. So answering questions from people on the forum and in the Facebook group was one way I could be like, I know they're going to be interested because they asked the question in the first place. And with these articles, it's been, you know, now I have people reaching out to me and asking me questions about lipidology and specific questions that they have. And, you know, saying, I really enjoyed your article. You know, do you know anything about this process? Or have you looked into this? Or, you know, you're right on this, but have you looked into this? And it's an even deeper level of understanding. And with Dave, too, it's like, this is a type of friend I've not had before, because, like I said, I've been obsessively into things before, and obviously I've had friends before, but I never had a friend who could reach me on that level, where it's like I'll message them and talk on and on and on and on and multiple paragraphs about things, and they'll be just as excited to talk to me about it and be like, oh, that's really interesting. Have you looked into this yet? Can you look into this for me? So it's just been very comforting to have someone I can geek out with and just know, like, it's not going to be boring for them. It's not going to be annoying for them, because they're just as excited about it as I am. And that's slowly been growing because of the articles, because it's basically like a self-selecting population, you know? If you find what I say interesting, you'll follow me on Twitter and you'll reach out to me, and that type of thing. And I'm always happy for people to do that, to ask questions, because it's like, it's building a community for me of people I just really, really enjoy talking to and explaining things and asking them questions and all that. It's been awesome.
I was going to say, it's not just people learning from you that are chipping in, but you've got people, presumably, who you can learn from chipping in, who are saying, like you were saying, what about looking into this process? And they give you new rabbit holes and new directions to go down.
All the time. I follow a lot of very smart people. And some of the stuff they say is so wildly interesting, and I've been challenged on some stuff, and my views have had to change because of it, because what they said was just so undeniable. Like, they've presented evidence, and like, how can I ignore that? So I've just grown as a person because of these people, and I can't appreciate it enough. It's really cool.
So you mentioned your co-workers. They presumably have seen quite a big change in you too at work.
Yeah, they've commented a few times. I used to not speak very much. I didn't really joke around, was very withdrawn. They'd get maybe a hello out of me, some questions related to the job, and now I talk all the time. And granted, sometimes I'm still awkward. I don't think that's ever going to go away. But, you know, I'll be very sarcastic with them, joke around. And I think we've grown closer because of it. Or at least we get along a whole lot better. So they have commented that I've changed a lot through this.
Sounds like you hold your own a bit more in that environment. And you've had a bit of influence on them, haven't you, with your keto way of eating?
Yeah, so I've had one coworker who has gone keto since I started, he and his wife. And I've had others who've kind of changed little things. I had one try it, decided it wasn't for her, and, you know, that's fine. I'm glad she tried it. And, you know, like my manager, I'll talk about it with him all the time. He's changed a few of his own behaviors. Not adding so much sugar to his coffee, replacing like vegetable oils with healthy fats and stuff like that, kind of eating bacon-wrapped hot dogs instead of a hot dog with a bun, or bunless hamburgers with extra fat on there. And so there has been some influence, and it's very interesting because, you know, on the one hand, they'll comment, you know, you're going to drop dead of a heart attack, you're eating all this bacon and pork and red meat and this type of stuff. But then on the other hand, they'll ask me my opinion on things. So it's sort of interesting to kind of navigate that and figure out, you know, like, what do they actually think of all this stuff? And do they have any questions? And could they benefit from this at all? I've had a lot of very, very enlightening conversations with them where it's very interesting to see how they view it.
And it sounds like you can have that influence on all sorts of different levels. So yeah, it's great if you can convert someone completely to keto and they see the full benefits. But it sounds like also just little bits that ripple out, like you were saying about people reducing sugar and reducing the oils that are not good for them. You know, even making just a few of the changes that we make as part of the whole keto process will have a huge impact on their lives.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm not too bothered if they never go keto. Like, that's a decision you really have to make for yourself. But just giving them the knowledge and kind of talking about it, because one of the topics that's come up is, you know, like, why would you cut sugar out of your life? That's so extreme. I'd be so miserable without sugar. And I kind of talked to one of my coworkers about it, and I was like, you really have to look at it from the viewpoint of someone whose life is already miserable with sugar. And if you cut sugar out, like, yes, that's extreme, but so is getting an amputation from diabetes. So is being severely depressed. So is being morbidly obese. That is extreme too. If you're already living an extreme, then, you know, cutting out sugar is maybe not the easiest thing in the world, but it is a very sensible decision to make, especially if it works. And, you know, they kind of commented, I never thought of that before. And I don't think a lot of people do, because there are many people who, you know, the only issue they have with sugar is maybe it's slightly addictive. Maybe it just makes them hungrier, even if they're not aware of that. But there are a whole ton of people out there who are already living very extreme lives. And, you know, at that point, an extreme decision is warranted, honestly. And it certainly was for me.
I was going to say that just that comment in itself is ironic in the, you know, I couldn't give up sugar. It will make me miserable. But for quite a few of us, that is exactly what has been making us miserable. So the very act of giving it up is going to do the opposite of
exactly.
That, which is a good thing. And like you say, you just don't realize it until you do it and you see the benefits.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the ways that I benefited from just trying it. Like, I gave myself 2 months and I'm not going to cheat and I'm just going to stick to it strictly. And granted, through that time, I think in total I tracked maybe like 3 days because I don't like doing it. But at the same time, it's like I was very strict with it. I made sure, like, these foods are off limits, like no honey, no flour, no sugar, whatever, no fruit for a long time. And these are the low-carb vegetables, and I started memorizing that, and I stuck to it. And seeing the difference, it's like, if just doing this made me lose 20 pounds, made me get my blood pressure back to normal, no longer high, if it made my joints stop hurting, at 22, my joints were aching. I could not go on long walks without a break because they hurt so bad. And even before I lost a significant amount of weight, that went away. And, you know, if my mood is much more stable, if I'm not hungry all the time, if I can eat to where I'm full and I don't want to go and get more food after that, you know, how can I go back to that? I it wouldn't be logical. Like, I just would not be able to even consider it, because like that comparison of when I started to 2 months after that is such a huge change in itself. Like, at that point I had already decided I'm just sticking with this for life because I clearly do way better with it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you've got all those problems that are quite severe already at a young age, they're only going to get worse, aren't they?
Yeah.
So presumably you sort of sat there thinking, well, goodness, what the hell am I going to be like when I'm 30 or 40?
Right.
If my joints and my mood are this bad now, just how bad are they going to be?
Yeah.
You know, with each decade that passes. So, yeah, that was definitely, obviously, a fantastic thing to do. So you have influenced somebody closer to home, haven't you? Like, literally at home. I can remember following the process, getting your dad on board with keto, because
yes,
that was quite a challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I had discussed with him several times because he had a heart attack in his 40s. And he's made a recovery from that, but he still had heart pain and all this type of thing. And I had talked to him and talked to him and talked to him, and, you know, here's the evidence. And, you know, Ivor Cummins has talked about how heart disease is really just undiagnosed diabetes, a symptom of it. And that includes you too. And still, he was very, very resistant to it. And eventually I actually just bribed him. I said, if you follow this for 6 months, then I'll give you so-and-so amount of money, and you don't have to make a decision right now, but if you don't answer within a couple days, you know, I'm revoking it. And that's kind of when he decided to do it, in part because of the money, but also because he had promised Mom that he would do everything he could to take care of himself. And so he did stick with that, and he lost, I think, 35 pounds or so. His heart pain eased a lot. Yeah, he stopped being so hungry. he started adapting some of his recipes. He kind of figured out how to make keto stuff. And that time is now up. So he went through with the agreement. He got his money. And he has gone back a little bit, but not nearly to the point that he used to be. And for sure, he is more aware of it. And, like, there is some bread added back in. There's some, I think, like, candy or something like that, but not, like, every day. So, yeah, there's been some permanent change in there. And I think at this point it'll probably take him a while to kind of figure out where he wants to stay at. He said if he starts to gain weight back, then he'll cut back on carbs. And he's kind of accepted that the amount of sugar and starch and all that type of stuff that he's eating is influencing his weight and how he feels and how hungry he is. So yeah, I'm very pleased that he didn't take the money and then go completely back to where he was. I kind of wondered if that's what he would do, but no, he has improved a lot, and that's really all that I could ask for, because, like, this is my dad. I want him to be healthy, and I want him to feel good, and I don't want him to have, you know, like, heart pain all the time and have to take all these different medicines for it. And so I've been very happy with the progress that he's made and how he's doing so far.
Well, presumably he's seen results on that side, hasn't he, with the heart pain and the medication and blood test results? Presumably there's been some kind of improvement there.
Yeah, so his heart pain, definitely. He said he doesn't have it anymore as much, so there's a greater frequency of no pain, and then when there is pain, there's less of it. So it hasn't gone away completely, but it is definitely much improved. And I've encouraged him to get blood tests, but he's not so much of a data geek as I am, so I keep pushing him. I'm hoping he'll give in. I'd be interested to see what kind of results he's had.
It says, yeah, not like you, who likes to get blood drawn at every possible opportunity.
Ah, yes.
Because tell me a little bit about what your keto looks like at the moment, because it seems to constantly change depending on what experiment you're doing, revolving around which blood tests you're having at the time.
Right. So my very first experiment was over the weekend at KetoFest, where I did the Feldman Protocol, which was wildly successful. I came in second place for the biggest drop. And I thought that was very cool that I could manipulate my markers like that. And talking to Dave Moore and kind of going through different theories, I decided to do an experiment where I would try carnivore. So meat and dairy and coffee and some diet drinks only. And kind of see what that did to my levels. You know, would my HDL go up? Would my LDL change? Would I lose any weight? How would I feel?
I'm guessing you had a few conversations with Amber about that.
Yes, I did. Amber was also part of the reason why I did it, because I saw her talk at KetoFest and it was super interesting. I admire her a lot. She's majorly cool. And she had seen major improvement with carnivore compared to keto, so I was kind of curious as well. And then on the lipid side of things, Dave had mentioned he intended to do a carnivore experiment at some point, but he had kind of already lined himself up for all these other tests that he's doing. So I kind of decided to sneak in and grab the experiment first before he could. And he's kind of helped me set that up and what tests I should get and how frequent I should get them. So, yeah. But then in the middle of the carnivore experiment, right before I intended to get my first draw, because I didn't get a baseline that time, I got sick, which kind of messed with things a little bit. And I kind of talked to Dave about it, and I was like, you know, should I wait until I get better, or should I just go ahead and do it and change it into look kind of like this different experiment? And he was like, you know, what I would do is I would get the data. So I was like, well, okay. And that has been very interesting. So I'm still in the middle of that now. I'm about almost 8 weeks in. And still recovering. So the first test I got, all markers were pleasantly horrible, about as I expected. And I'm now tracking how it evolves over time as I get better, and things are trending downwards. So I've had two blood draws at this point. So not much data in yet, but it's been very, very interesting. So my keto has been affected by that, in that I'm now eating only meat, fish, and dairy for right now, and coffee and stuff like that, as I mentioned. And 5 days before each blood draw, I'm mimicking what I ate for that first one. And at the time, I was very sick, so I wasn't eating a lot, and I was eating very weird things, kind of just what I had around. So eating the same thing for 5 days in a row, like this same plan, this same 5 day plan.
This weird, weird 5 day plan that was skewed by you being ill, and now you've got to repeat it.
Yeah, like random, like a lot of it is only about 1,000 calories a day, which is not super pleasant, but I'll grant it's easier than when I was non-keto. It's very frustrating because for the entire carnivore experiment, I've been kind of eating ad libitum. So as much as I want what I want, if I was craving a particular type of meat, I would eat that. If I craved pork, I'd eat that. If beef, you know, I'd eat that. And now I'm in another one of those 5 day periods where it's like, okay, I have to eat this today. Okay, I have to eat this today and this certain amount. And I have to weigh it out. And it's like, oh, I have to eat Colby Jack cheese today, and I've discovered I really, really hate it. But, you know, there are some times where it's like, I really don't want to do this anymore. This sucks. But then it's like, if I go off plan, then that'll skew the data, and I really, really want to know how this works. So my curiosity overpowers my hatred of specific types of cheese, I guess. And before carnivore, I guess since KetoFest, I had been edging further away from omnivore into carnivore. Because like I said, I had seen, Amber's presentation, and from, at the very least, what I got from that is I don't need vegetables. If I don't want them, I don't have to have them. So from then on, it was like, you know, I don't really want vegetables right now, so I'll just eat this. And after Keto Fest, I was consumed with a lot of studying. So mostly I wanted to save time, so I started just making the quickest meal I could possibly think of, which is like baked chicken thigh dipped in some melted butter, and just eat that real quick and then get back to studying. And so I had already been sort of going more into carnivore anyway, so it wasn't a huge leap. And then at the start, it's very interesting to compare at the start of keto to now, because at the start of keto, Mom had commented that we were eating more vegetables than even before keto. And like typically the thought is, you know, keto is all like fat and protein and you can't really eat vegetables and whatever, but we were actually eating more because we were trying out like cauliflower mash with heavy cream and Parmesan and that type of stuff. And it was just like this whole new experience of everything tastes so much better because it has fat in it, and there are all these interesting recipes and all of it makes us feel good. And I had remember seeing an article about a guy in Germany who only ate raw meat. And I had commented to Dad about that. And I was like, oh yeah, I can do keto, but meat only, that's way too extreme for me. I could never do that. And then now here I am eating only meat and dairy. And it's like, you know, this really isn't so bad. I don't think I ever really liked vegetables that much anyway. I had commented to Amber that I wasn't really sure what I would do for my next visit in Sweden, because it's like the assumption at the time was that this experiment would be over and I can go back to eating normally. And it was like, vegetables are a distant memory, and honestly, I don't really miss them that much.
Well, I think that's the thing. You just go with what you feel like doing at the time, and perhaps you know, perhaps you'll want to suddenly have some vegetables back in, and perhaps you won't. But the, like you say, the beauty of it is you can choose.
Right.
Both work, so you can just go with what feels good.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge advantage with keto. Like, it's so adaptable, and I mean, granted, there are some restrictions, but the big thing is, if you don't want to eat something, you don't have to. Like, if you are vegetarian or vegan, you can still do keto. On the other hand, if you don't really like vegetables, you don't have to eat them. There's no, like, you have to eat your veggies, you have to eat this, you have to eat that. It's like, you pick real low-carb food, preferably, like, you pick, like, the healthy fats, and you eat what you want. And if something makes you feel bad, you don't eat it anymore. If something is really, really gross and you don't like it, you don't have to eat it. So it's, like, the opposite of how you would typically think of a diet. Like, it's the eat what you want to a point diet, and you eat until you're full. And then you don't eat when you're not hungry. The easiest rules in the world. And it has been extremely freeing for me. There's no feeling guilt from being hungry. There's no feeling guilt from eating too much. Like, if I'm super hungry, I'm going to eat a lot, and end of story. Like, no feeling guilty about it. It's what my body wanted, so I'm just going to do it.
I've had an almost lifelong guilt for really, really disliking fruit. I mean, there are actually a couple of things I'll eat now, like, you know, the odd raspberry or something. But I've always hated it. And I've always, you know, it's always been something that my parents have encouraged me to, you know, try and like and try and eat. It's always been, well, just have this, just have this. Finally, I find this way of eating that says you really shouldn't eat fruit. It's like, yes, this is the perfect diet for me. This is what I've been looking for my whole life, because I hate fruit so much. So it just goes to show, doesn't it, that there's really a perfect way of eating out there for everybody.
Yeah, and granted, I was very much a fruit fiend. I would eat just like an entire thing of pineapple if I could get it all down, and watermelon and cantaloupe and all that type of stuff. But the other thing is, even though I've been keeping those foods out of my life, it's like, you know, I understand exactly what they do. I understand exactly how it works when I eat them. I understand exactly how I feel when I eat them. So now it's to the point where I'll be at work and someone brings in donuts or muffins or cupcakes or bagels or whatever, I don't even look at it as food anymore. I look at it as, like, I'll pass it in the hall and I'll look at it, and my brain, like, doesn't even register it at this point. It's just registered as, you know, something that's not going to make me feel good. Where's the bacon?
Bring on the bacon. I'll have that instead.
Yeah.
So what's next? What have you got planned next? I think there are more articles in the pipework, aren't there?
Yes. I have like 10 or 12 or something different articles that I want to write. I'm working on the third one right now. For me, the biggest struggle is not so much writing the article, so much as taking a break and not working on it at all. Because otherwise I will keep going until I cannot anymore. And that's not ideal. So I had to take a bit of a break, but I am back to it now. And after that, I do have more articles published. I'm working on some things with Dave. I'm continuing this sick data experiment. Possibly even as I go to Sweden, I'll continue it. Because it's, I really want to track it back to my baseline, and it's just not even close. And I leave in a week and a half, so I can't really leave it unfinished. It would bug me forever.
But you have got the opportunity now for a bit of time out in Sweden to do a few different things.
Yeah. Luckily, my job and manager are very permitting to that type of thing, so I have time set aside for Sweden and for going to low-carb Breckenridge and then to KetoFest next year, so
that sounds like a really exciting 2018 coming up.
Yes. I'm looking very much forward to it.
More growth. Well, I'll be fascinated to follow your progress, which is just going up and up and up all the time. It's been fantastic to watch. Well, it's been lovely talking to you today and finding out a bit more about the woman behind all these super impressive articles.
Thank you.
So why don't we round up with a top tip for the listeners?
So for my top tip today, I actually have a quote from a book I'm reading right now called Tripping Over the Truth. It's about sort of like the history of cancer research. And this is from the beginning of the book, and I found it very inspiring and it resonated a lot with me. So the quote is, "Any scientist will tell you that theories are anything but permanent. They are only our closest approximation of the truth at a fleeting moment in an otherwise infinite continuum of discovery." So what I mean by that quote in this context is people tend to think that once you settle into anything, then that's it, and you're stuck with it forever, and it's never changing. But I think it's quite the opposite. For your growth as a person, for your version of keto, for how you understand the world, I think people need to be ready to change. To not only try new things, but also to admit things aren't working the way they used to anymore, and it's time to change things up. Maybe it's time to make an extreme decision. It's time to admit that, you know, things aren't the same as maybe they were a month ago. Maybe it's time to admit that you were wrong about something. So I would say, you know, don't fear being wrong. That's my top tip. Don't fear being wrong and be ready to change. Because honestly, any scientist or citizen researcher will tell you that the only way you can learn anything about yourself, about how the lipid system works, about anything, is to be ready to admit you're wrong. Because as soon as you get stuck in any certain way of thinking, that's how you're going to destroy everything, because it leaves no room for learning. And honestly, one of the biggest things that I've been able to do is just be ready to be wrong and be happy when I'm wrong, because it means I've learned something new.
Exactly. And I think it's always good to challenge whatever belief you have. So if you end up with quite a strong belief or something, is to keep challenging it to make sure that it is as strong as you thought it was in the first place.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I did with the questions that Dave originally gave me. I wrote down all the pieces of it and I tried to prove or disprove each and every single part. And that's what we should be doing in our lives. We should be trying to prove or disprove every single belief that we have, because there's always a chance that we've been making assumptions like, you know, sugar isn't that big of a deal. I could never live without sugar. And it could just be that, you know, it's not true.
Absolutely. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you today, Siobhan. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomenpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for the show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomenpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and help create new shows, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowomen, where you can make a monthly contribution, big or small. You can also simply hit the support button on the Keto Women website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes. This week's quote is from Marie Curie. "I was taught that the way of progress was neither swift nor easy." Bye-bye, keto lovelies.